First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
Well, we cannot forget our daily check-in on the ice as we are back on a Wednesday afternoon. Hump day. Officially halfway through the week. As it's 2.5 shows down, 2.5 shows to play.
You can't give me a better hump day than that?
That wasn't good enough.
Didn't have enough energy in it, you know what I mean?
I get the, I think I picked up what you were putting down there as far as a reference back to a man who will remain nameless. But regardless, the Stanley Cup playoffs continued last night with a trio of games in Raleigh, Dallas, and Edmonton. And we'll start in Raleigh, where the first game of the night went to the visitors. The only road team to win last night of the three was the New York Islanders. They win it 3-2. Gosh, the second goal in this game that the Islanders scored was won by Brock Nelson. And the puck shot came in from the point, deflected off the face of Sebastian Aho for the Carolina Hurricanes. He needed to go get stitched up later on, but it goes off the face of Aho. And out of midair, Nelson bats it into the goal and stretches the lead to 2-0 for the Isles. Carolina would battle back a couple of different junctures, got to within 2-1 and then 3-2. But the 3-2 score would hold up last night for New York, as Ilya Sorokin, the goaltender for the Islanders, was excellent. Matthew Barzell with a very nice goal on an odd-man rush. And the Islanders live to see another day. And there is a fight and a scrappiness with this Islanders group that we've seen the last 4 or 5 years now. I know they're on another coach now, as Barry Trotz is no longer there. But I think back to some of those series that they ultimately ended up losing against the Tampa Bay Lightning when they had to come back in those series. They were down 3-1 in the bubble. Jordan Eberle had a game winner for him in Game 5, forced to Game 6. Ultimately, they lost, and the Lightning won the Cup. Last year, Anthony Beauvillier had a game winner in Game 6 at Nassau Coliseum, and the place was going crazy, and they forced a Game 7. They went to Tampa and lost Game 7. That was in 2021. Last year, the Islanders missed the playoffs. But there is a, never-say-die attitude that these Islanders have, and last night, they went out and played probably their best game of the series so far on the road in a building that has been tough to win in, and they kept their season alive. I was surprised to an extent. It sure felt like their souls were, at the very least, punctured a bit after the Game 4 loss to the Carolina Hurricanes at UBS Arena on Sunday afternoon. But they are going back to that very building on Friday evening. It should be rocking in Elmont, New York. The new building for the Islanders is hosting playoff games for the first time, and it's a great fan base there on Long Island. So they stay alive thanks to Brock Nelson, mentioned that goal, and Matthew Barzell gets the game winner. New York 3, Carolina 2 last night in Raleigh. In Dallas, Jake Oettinger continues to be Jake Oettinger, as this guy is a big-time goaltender in big games at the age of 24, and he continued to deliver last night for the Stars, as he was the first star of the game, no pun intended. 27 saves for the shutout. Dallas 4, Minnesota nothing. Tyler Seguin a 2-point night with a goal and an assist. Roope Hintz adds 3 helpers, and the Stars are 1 win away from the second round in the Western Conference. Dallas is definitely a team that I think can make a deep run. I mean, they seem to have a nice complement of, they got a couple high-end players up front. I mentioned Hintz, and the Jason Robertson guy is really good. He had a goal last night. Then you have, obviously, that quarterback on defense in Miro Heiskanen with some other experienced guys, Esa Lindell, Ryan Suter back there. And you got the goaltender. And if you have Jake Oettinger, I just finished talking about Ilya Sorokin for the Islanders. If you have good goaltending this time of year, you always have a chance. And, I'm sure there's some hockey nerds out there saying, yeah, but Henrik Lundqvist never won the Stanley Cup. Carey Price never won the Stanley Cup. You got to be able to help your goaltender out for sure. And I'd argue that both Montreal and the Rangers did not provide adequate scoring in front of those goaltenders. And that's the thing. I think Dallas has that. Like, I think this is a very complete hockey team with a goaltender who can win a game by himself at any moment, but also with some punch up front to win a higher scoring game every now and again if Ottinger has a rough night. And with good enough defense in front of Ottinger to where they're not going to ask him to stand on his head every night. Like, last night, he makes a 27-save shutout. Like, he's the first star of the game, and he's, you know, good on him for that. But Dallas jumped out right away last night. And when you can do that, it just decreases the stress of some of those saves for your goaltender. Tyler Seguin's power play goal came at 2:22 elapsed time. So right away, they jump out 1-0. Robertson gets a power play goal about halfway through the first period. And then early in the second period, they make it 3-0. And so then that also allows you to maybe go a little more meat and potatoes almost, where you just say, hey, we're going to sit on this lead, but we have such a good goalie, and our defense is good enough to where we're okay with that. Like, there's a sentiment sometimes in hockey that sitting on leads is bad and that it allows teams to become complacent and they don't attack as much and they don't generate scoring chances because they figure they have enough goals. And that is a dangerous pitfall that you can fall into. It's why the cliche, a two-goal lead is the most dangerous lead in hockey, was born, because teams don't play the same with the same edge up front when they're up two compared to being up one, and they sit back and relax, and then the lead disappears. But I'm not saying that the Dallas Stars are this good, but the New Jersey Devils, when I was growing up and as a child, perfected that kind of hockey, where they had Marty Brodeur in goal, and they were very physical, and they had very good blue lines, and I can't remember which Niedermeyer they had back there, but it was, they got up 2-0, and like the game was over. And so I would push back a little bit on that, you know, sitting on the lead is always a bad kind of stereotype. It can be. But if you got Jake Ottinger in net, I'd say they sat on that lead just fine last night. Dallas 4, Minnesota 0, heading back to St. Paul for Game 6 at the Xcel Energy Center. Wild will try and keep their season alive. And speaking of keeping their seasons alive, well, the Los Angeles Kings will get 3 days off as some scheduling with the NBA playoffs resulted in Edmonton and Los Angeles not playing Game 6 until Saturday night, and the Kings will be facing elimination when we get to Saturday as they get doubled up last night in Western Canada. Edmonton 6, Los Angeles 3. And one of the stories for Edmonton, it always is a story, is the high-end talent that they can throw at you, and it has continued. When they win, their top guys stay, you know, come to the forefront. And, you know, you get your best players to be your best players. It's sounds boring, but sometimes, you know, you just need those guys to carry you. And how about 6 goals in the first round now for Leon Draisaitl as he scores again last night. Connor McDavid had a helper. That was early in the game. And they get a couple more power play goals. This is by far the best power play in the National Hockey League. Evander Kane and, Evander Kane had one. And it was, I believe, Nick Bjugstad had the other as Edmonton now leads the series 3-2 on Los Angeles. And I think that at the end of the day for L.A., they were just outmatched last night. They tried to pull, it was Zach Hyman that had the other power play goal for Edmonton. But L.A. pulled Jonas Corposalo last night. They were just trying to change the tempo up a little bit, slow the game down, because they got into a little bit of a track meet last night. It was 3-2 after one period. Edmonton had the lead. And yeah, you say, okay, it's a one-goal lead for Edmonton. You'll live with that if you're a visitor and they're building at that time. But fast pace against Edmonton with all the skill and speed they have, you're going to lose a lot more than you're going to win playing that game. So how does Los Angeles go back to its barn and slow the game down, make it a little more physical? Drew Doughty had a big hit last night on, I can't remember the player for Edmonton, but they're going to need more of that. They're going to need to be able to make it a little more physical, And, you know, because even in game four, which was also won by Edmonton, the Kings had a 3-0 lead. Edmonton had the period of the series so far, the second period of that game four at Crypto, and it was 3-3 after two. Ended up a 5-4 Edmonton win in overtime. So higher scoring games against the Oilers, you are playing with fire, and there have been 9 total goals in each of the last two games. Game 4, 5-4 Edmonton. Game 5, 6-3 Edmonton. So how do the Kings get it back more into a lower scoring, tight checking type of game as they had in Friday night's Game 3, which they won 3-2? And also their other win in the series, 4-3. So a little bit more lower scoring. So those were your three games last night in the National Hockey League. No overtime, not a lot of drama. I mean, yes, the Islanders and the Hurricanes ends up being a one-goal game, but the Islanders got up 2-0 and just maintained arm's-length distance away from the Carolina Hurricanes. So all three series that played last night are 3-2. We still don't have anybody that has been through to the next round in the NHL. So we have yet to see the great tradition of the handshakes at the end of a playoff series take place. It could happen tonight, though, as we will later on in the show get to the games that are being played tonight, both on the ice and on the hardwood. Aaron Rodgers was introduced just about an hour ago in North Jersey, as the weirdo is a New York Jet. And we will discuss, I think we have some cuts from his press conference. The introduction was rather unique, to say the least. We're back on the other side. First thing in sports, SportsMap Radio.
With First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
This is the song that was playing throughout the Jets facility at the press conference when Aaron Rodgers was introduced. I'm sorry, like, did they win the Super Bowl? Did they even win a game? It's like when the Miami Heat had that stupid party just because they got LeBron, Chris Bosh, and kept Dwayne Wade. This wasn't quite that, but that's what I thought of when I saw this. Because these coronations over just getting a player to come. And I'll even, yeah, I will offer up one of my own teams here to castrate. And that is, the Sixers did this when Andrew Bynum was traded, and it was utter disaster. I mean, you know, they should be, again, it was so embarrassing looking back on it. And I was guilty of it. I went to the press conference that they invited the fans to, and they had this big fanfare. But it just is not, like, it's just, like, anti-competitive. Like, you haven't done anything. And it's not really what sports are about, to be acting like you've already won something because you happen to get this player on your team. So that was pathetic that they played a song, but it is what it is. As far as what was said, I mean, there was a lot there about him being in a spot where he trusts the brain trust. He seems to really like the drafting that Joe Douglas has done the last couple of years, and how can you not? I mean, offensive and defensive rookies of the year with Garrett Wilson and Sauce Gardner. And, of course, Garrett Wilson's a wide receiver, so we'll have him to throw to. So I think that definitely helped. the Jets, and he mentioned his relationship with Nathaniel Hackett, who, hey, it worked, I guess. The Jets hired Nathaniel Hackett to be their OC, and they made a lot of changes to their offensive staff. And it was the kind of move that we all saw. Like, it's interesting because this whole thing was so public, right? And when you bring in Hackett, everybody's like Aaron Rodgers. And then all of the reporting the whole last couple of months was, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Jets want Aaron Rodgers, you know, solely fixated on Aaron Rodgers. Then he goes on McAfee and says he wants to play for the Jets, but then he's still got this awkward 5 to 6 week gap in between when he says that to when the trade actually gets over the finish line to where we all know it. And it really dates back to when they hired Hackett. And, hey, again, I question the Jets' process as to why they went all in on Aaron Rodgers when we don't know how long he's going to be there, and I don't think they're winning the AFC East. Maybe they're a wild card, which means winning 3 road playoff games in a loaded AFC, all with this quarterback who's getting up there in age. Like, it's just the process for me feels short-sighted, but they need to win games. Robert Saleh has not made the playoffs since he has been running the Jets, and he is entering his third or fourth season. Can't remember. I think it's his fourth, actually. I believe 2020 was his first year there. So, you know, just general rule of thumb, coaching in the National Football League, you miss the playoffs. Excuse me, I was wrong. I stand corrected. This will be his third season with the Jets. But you miss the playoffs for 3 years consecutively. Like, you're skating on thin ice if you're even still skating by the end of that third year. So they need to get into the playoffs this year, bare minimum. And at least if they make the playoffs, even if Rodgers isn't there, they can say, all right, well, we've made progress. And I don't know. Maybe we can look for this for tomorrow because John Bellmer cut up a lot of Rodgers cuts. I'd be curious as to what Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh were saying about the red shirt process for Zach Wilson, because it seems like that's the plan, is that they still want to go back to Zach Wilson, whether that's in 2024 or beyond. And I'm sure they were asked about that, and maybe they didn't necessarily give a juicy answer and they had some kind of cliche ready, but it's clear that the Jets are going to be looking for a post-Rodgers quarterback in the not-too-distant future. So at least if they can win with Rodgers this year and make the playoffs, there's at least some stability within the organization to be able to sell to another quarterback, if it is not Zach Wilson, of, hey, you know what? Like, we were still pretty good when we had Aaron Rodgers. Now, as for Rodgers' future beyond 2023, he addressed that, and here's what he said.
Yeah, right now I'm just going to focus on this season, and I'm excited about being here. I expect to be here for the duration of the offseason. And I'm excited to get to know my new teammates and the coaching staff and the organization.
I love how the little pause there when he goes, I expect to be there for. He's like, well, wait a second. Let me make sure I don't say any time period that extends beyond this season, because I just said I'm focused on this season. And so he goes, I expect to be there for the duration of the offseason. Like, okay. So you're going to, you know, introduce all the other teammates to ayahuasca and whatever your other rituals are. You got 3 months until training camp to
take them all to the dark retreat.
Dark. Maybe there will be a darkness retreat with the wide receivers, perhaps, or the offensive line. Maybe we'll invite everybody. Yeah, if you make the Jets, that's what they should do. For the 53 men that make the roster, your prize is a 53-person darkness retreat with Aaron Rodgers and the other 52 people.
I think I'd request a trade immediately.
But you know he wasn't going to give you an answer there, because we know exactly what's going to happen when the season's over. It's going to be, what's Aaron Rodgers doing in like January 20th when it's conference championship week and the Jets aren't playing, and the game story of that week in the NFL is Aaron Rodgers' future. You know, they only got 2 games, and then after the Super Bowl, it's going to move itself up from the number two story behind the playoff games that are left to the number one story. That's what he wants. This is all part of the Aaron Rodgers game. We're not going to know. I don't think we're going to know if he's playing in 2024 until middle of February at the earliest. Maybe not even until March. Even if he knows that right now, we won't know for 9 months or however long. So, no, I don't think the Jets are going to be that good. Matter of fact, if you just had to, and I'd be curious what the odds are. I will definitely look at that. Yes, no, will they make the playoffs? I'd probably bet no, because I think there's an L. Anytime you bring in a new quarterback, and I know that this has worked recently, where Matthew Stafford won the Super Bowl in his first year in L.A., and Tom Brady won the Super Bowl in their first year with Tampa. So that's what the Jets are going for. But I'm more of the mindset, and Peyton Manning eventually won a Super Bowl in Denver, was still pretty good. So the veteran that's a Hall of Famer probably in the case of Stafford as well, but certainly Rodgers, Peyton, and Brady are, can he just transcend the common norm that is the learning curve, that is the new teammates, that is the new system, even though I'm sure the system will be very similar with Nathaniel Hackett. That is a new offensive line, which still needs help, even though they've invested some high picks in recent drafts in offensive line. Are they able to overcome what made the Jets a non-playoff team? Can you just put this quarterback on that team, and can they make them that much better? And and Stafford also, by the way, let's not forget, the Rams made a Super Bowl with Jared Goff. So it wasn't like he was going to a bad team. The Bucs were garbage before Brady got there. So that is an example of a quarterback really transcending things. And Peyton Manning certainly got the Broncos, not that they were bad before, but they got better with Peyton Manning, and he elevated them. That's what the Jets are banking on. I just think that after a down 2022, we've already started to see a little bit of the erosion for Aaron Rodgers, and that the Jets, if I had to guess, if they were in the NFC, sure, they're a playoff team. But in the AFC, just in that division, I don't know that I'm buying it. And then elsewhere, the AFC North's really good. The AFC West still has bare minimum Kansas City and Los Angeles. Maybe the Raiders or the Broncos figure it out. And so it's not adding up for me with the Jets in 2023. We'll take a timeout. We'll go back to the Progressive guest line. Steve Popper from Newsday, as we're talking a lot of Knicks, Cavs. Haven't talked a lot of that playoff series in the Eastern Conference in the NBA. More with Steve on the other side.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
Let's go out to the Progressive guest line as we continue to discuss Game 5 between the New York Knicks and the Cleveland Cavaliers tonight on Lake Erie as the Knicks try and punch their ticket to the Eastern Conference semifinals. For the first time in a decade, we bring on Steve Popper from Newsday to discuss the Knicks and what has happened so far in this series and how it might conclude. Steve, thank you for your time. How you doing?
Sure. Good. Just trying to stay warm here in Cleveland.
How cold is it? I'm a Northeast guy. I grew up in South Jersey. I got family in Avon, which is a Cleveland suburb. How are things on Lake Erie today?
I'm a Central Jersey guy, and it feels like Costa Rica compared to this. A couple of us tried to do a baseball game last night, lasted about three innings, and just glad that the Knicks and Cavs are indoors. It's about a high of 40 here, low in the 30s, but just doesn't feel like spring here.
Well, Steve, I have to back up. I regret to inform you that I am a denier of the existence of Central Jersey. So I'm a firm North and South guy. It's called pork roll. Excuse me, I almost said Taylor Ham. What do you call it?
we go pork roll, but it's, I'm a freehold guy, and it is dead center.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Well, let's get to what we had you on to do, and that's obviously talk about this New York Knicks basketball team. And you know, I kind of chuckle a little bit at it because, obviously as a South Jersey guy, I grew up a Sixers fan, and I see the Garden going crazy and all the celebrities, and, I'm thinking, well, all of this to get out of the first round, but I do understand it's obviously been a very dysfunctional franchise for most of my lifetime. I'm 28. What has it meant to the area, North Jersey, the New York Metro, to just have the Knicks obviously on the precipice of winning a playoff series?
Well, I think we saw what it means to New York when at least the Eagles, they wait until they win a Super Bowl to have to grease down the poles down there to keep people from climbing them. In New York, they were climbing the poles. They were blocking traffic after the Game 3 win. So it's kind of crazy here. I think this is a team that, 2 years ago the Knicks were the 4 seed. They made the playoffs. But I don't think anybody believed in that team. And with good reason, they were exposed pretty quickly in the postseason. This is sort of a team that I think is the sort that New York likes. They're sort of a throwback. They play defense. They play hard. They're a hard-nosed group. Jalen Brunson is, if you look at him on paper, he's definitely not a prospect. He's a guy who was a second-round pick. Dallas didn't give him the money they really should have. He lands here and suddenly, he's a star. Josh Hart, on his fourth team in 6 seasons, is sort of an afterthought. They acquire him at the trade deadline, and he's been one of the key players here. They've kind of been that just hardworking group that warms the hearts of New Yorkers, who can finally chant defense again and not have it be sarcastic.
You mentioned that kind of defensive attitude that the Knicks have. I feel like in a lot of ways, that's what made Tom Thibodeau such a perfect fit with the Knicks, because you look at everywhere he's been in his coaching career, defense always a hallmark of Tibbs teams, right?
Absolutely. And the funny thing is, this year they really increased the pace of play. They've actually been a higher-ranked offensive team than defensive this year. But I think you see here in the postseason where they have, a chance to prepare and play the same team every game, they've really turned to defense. They've held the Cavs under 103 times, including, the 79-point game in Game 3 that's the lowest anyone has scored in the NBA this season, in a year that's kind of crazy scoring. So they've really kind of gone old school, basically, hard-nosed, tough defensive mindset, and it's worked so far. I approach this game 5, and one part of me is like, Cleveland really hasn't played well. They're due to have a night. But then I think, the Knicks really haven't gotten a lot out of Julius Randle. They haven't gotten, Emmanuel quickly having one of his, explosive six-man nights. So, they have a level to go up to here. So I think I kind of go in this one really not knowing what to expect. I just think, whoever throws the first punch tonight is probably going to be the one who wins this one. If the Knicks don't go out, Julius has one of his 18-point first quarters, they can end this quickly. And it's just the same way, if Donovan Mitchell, puts an imprint on it early, maybe the Knicks think, let's go back to New York and set off one more celebration in the streets there.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a good point about Julius Randle, and I feel like there is a Donovan Mitchell game coming at some point in this series, and if it were to come tonight with their backs against the wall for Cleveland, it wouldn't surprise me. Do you get the sense, though, that Cleveland is still confident here? I mean, because it's one thing to be down 3-1 and, with the mindset of we can still do this, we got Game 5 and Game 7 on our floor, but it's another to really have your spirits broken. Have the Knicks gotten that deep into the Cavs' souls?
Boy, it sure feels like it. They say all the right things in the interviews, but then you see them on the court, and it looks like, when the Knicks put the hammer to them, they've kind of backed off. They've been, I think, you don't want to say it, and they don't want to say it, but they've been soft inside. And the Knicks have realized after Game 2 that, R.J. Barrett, Jalen Brunson are doing what they do during the season. They're attacking those shot blockers that were supposed to be a big force, going right at them. And they've seen that they can do it. They can get in there and score at the rim on these guys. And once they start doing that, it opens up other things for other guys. I just think Cleveland has got to show a toughness that they haven't shown yet. Basically, Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell look like the toughest guys on the team, and that's no way to operate. The Knicks know how dangerous Donovan Mitchell is, and obviously by the summer they showed how much they wanted him. But what they've done is they've tried to take the ball out of his hands and let somebody else beat him. They're leaving, Isaac Okoro, Chetty Osmond. You know, they're leaving these guys wide open, Caris LeVert, and basically daring them to beat them on, you know, them be the shooters. And it hasn't worked yet. Game two, LeVert and Darius Garland had big games. But, you know, on the road, those guys didn't, under the pressure, they all kind of wilted. We'll see back in Cleveland tonight if they can change that, because the Knicks, I think, are going to not change that strategy. They're going to keep trying to let somebody other than Donovan Mitchell beat them.
Well, from the gist of what you've been saying here the last few minutes as we're talking with Steve Popper, covers the Knicks for Newsday, you seem pretty confident that whether it's tonight or on Friday, that the Knicks win this series.
You know, look, I thought it was a toss-up coming in, and I have a lot of respect for Cleveland. But what they've shown, sort of a not-there-yet team in these first four games, it's hard to see them, you know, mustering, you know, everything it takes to win three straight playoff games. You know, the Knicks are a good road team, too. So I don't even discount the possibility of the Knicks winning in Cleveland, that, you know, that they have two of three here. It's just, you know, the Knicks, the way they play, you know, they're going to come hard at you every night. And if you don't come hard every night right from the start, you're not going to beat this team. And that's not just Cleveland. I think, you know, they've shown this year that they can beat very good teams if those teams don't play with the intensity that they do. Now, the Knicks are not the most talented team, so if you do come with that intensity, you can beat them. But I just have a hard time seeing this Cleveland team beating them three straight games here.
Well, I guess we'll get you out on this then. How serious of a run could we be looking at for the Knicks? Because obviously, I'm sure Knicks fans, while they might be partying in the streets of Times Square like we're dropping the ball on New Year's Eve already, you can look ahead to the next round and see a possible series with Miami. And we talk about defense. It might be first to 85 in those games. If Miami can close out Milwaukee, could we possibly be looking at the Knicks in the conference finals?
Boy, you know, it's hard to imagine and think ahead to that, but, you know, that is one team with Hero out and Oladipo gone. You know, they're a shorthanded team. You know, the Knicks obviously had a better season than, you know, coming into this. They go in as the home court. They go in as the favorite. It's not something I think anyone expected. I don't think anyone expected the beginning of the season, you know, this to be better than a 500 team. But, you know, I tried to ask tactfully R.J. Barrett today about that, like closing out. And, you know, you see the injuries that happen around the league. And he's like, don't mention injuries. Please don't, you know, don't jinx us. But I think they want to get this done. That would give them a couple days rest. And they'll be rooting as hard as anyone for the Miami Heat, I think, because, you know, in Milwaukee, no matter what's happened here in this series, there's still just a class organization, talent-wise. And the Knicks know, you know, Giannis, Jrue Holiday, Middleton, this is a deep team that's hard to beat. So I think they definitely could picture a Miami series being something that they would feel much more confident going into.
There he is, Steve Popper, covers the Knicks for Newsday. Kind enough to join us on the Progressive Guest Line. Knicks and Cavs game five tonight in Cleveland as the Cavs look to stave off elimination while the Knicks look to join the Sixers in the second round in the Eastern Conference. Steve, thank you for your time. Enjoy the game.
Anytime. I'm happy that, you know, if it ends tonight, I get a couple days of relaxation back in Central Jersey.
Well, hey, I mean, with the Devils Rangers, I don't know how calm things are going to be back there.
We'll see. We'll see.
Thanks, Steve.
Anytime. You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios. Here's Greg Frank.
Well, it's kind of becoming a daily segment for us as we wrap up by previewing the action on the ice and on the hardwood for the playoffs in the NHL and in the NBA. And there is a lot of intrigue surrounding, as if we could have more, surrounding Golden State and Sacramento as Game 5 is tonight in the capital city of California as things shift back to Sacramento, tied at 2 games apiece. And we got this news when we were on the air on Monday, and it didn't sound great for De'Aaron Fox with the fractured left index finger. And he was expected to be listed as doubtful for Game 5. They did have an extra day of rest, the normal one-day gap, a two-day gap between Games 4 and 5, which I'm sure helped Fox a little bit. And it seems like he's going to give it a go tonight. And I think the important thing on noting that it is left index finger is that is his shooting hand. But here was what De'Aaron Fox had to say about his availability for Game 5.
It was actually meant to the side.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, it, like this. So this part of my finger is chipped on my left finger. Like I said, it's, I don't think it's a big deal, but obviously, depending on how much it gets hit and things like that, then I feel like the pain will increase. But if it was to stay the exact same way it is right now, I'll be fine.
So there you go. That doesn't indicate a dire situation for the star for Sacramento. And I don't know, it at least kind of felt like, John, we were talking about this together a little bit on Monday. Didn't it feel like there was a little more of a, darkness surrounding the situation than maybe there is now?
Yeah, it felt like the entire momentum of the series flipped on top of its head, right back on top of of Sacramento. And I mean, just getting him back, I think, is going to give a boost here. And then being at home for Sacramento kind of gives him a glimmer of light. Because I think we all felt like the series was going the complete opposite direction after Game 4.
Yeah, and because they lost by one, and then we hear this Fox report, and it just didn't seem like it was a good 24 hours for the Kings. And now, as we sit here, with Game 5 just hours away now, it seems like he's going to give it a go, and we'll see how hampered he is. I will say the one thing that I would be worried about if I was a Kings fan, I don't know if this has ever happened to you playing basketball, but you ever, sometimes try and catch a pass, and, if it's a more crisp, pass with, more pace on it, one of your fingers maybe kind of gets jammed in for a moment and maybe stings for a little bit, and you're able to kind of pop it back into place, and you don't need to, get anything done at the finger, but, has something like that happened to you playing basketball?
And it's happened to every single person that's ever played basketball.
Right.
Yeah.
So my concern here would be, and I'm sure maybe you'll have something on it, but, something minor like that, if you have a normal index finger, when you already have a, less than 100% index finger, if it could get worse and knock him out of the game.
Well, he talked about pain management. As long as he can manage it, it should be fine.
So, but that's the thing, meaning if he's talking about pain management, that there is some pain there that he's going to try and play through. So something, when it's a finger in basketball, something as simple as, Malik Monk throws me this skip pass and, I catch it funky and it hits off my finger and, now that pain management is way worse. That could be all it takes.
I think I'd be worried about that 100% if I was a Kings fan. But I think the more important thing is to see how he shoots. I mean, it's on his shooting hand. And the ball comes right off the tip of the fingers. Is this going to, drastically affect his shot going forward? We'll have to really see.
Right, because, he does take a lot of threes. And it's an element of his game that isn't there if he can't do it. So we'll have to see how he looks tonight and moving forward in the series. How that, if it lingers into Game 6, which is back in San Francisco on Friday night, it's unfortunate for the Kings if it does, because it's been such a fun series. And, I've always said, even if it's benefit to your team, it just sucks when injuries get in the way of high-quality playoff series or playoff games. And, this is why you play. You want to get to these big moments, and as fans, this is what we watch for, what the buildup is for. October through April in the NBA, at least early April, is all for this point. This is why you do load management. This is why you make trades at the trade deadline. So it sucks when things kind of crumble a little bit. We'll go in reverse chronological order as the Sacramento Kings and Golden State Warriors are the last game tonight. The penultimate game on the card, the Miami Heat visiting the Milwaukee Bucks, and Milwaukee's a hefty 12-point favorite. Seems unlikely that Milwaukee would just lay down here. So, and then if you, the question is, if you're Miami, like, how much effort are you putting into this game if you do get behind? This feels like one where you might see how the first quarter goes, second quarter goes, and then get ready to go back and put all your eggs in the game six basket back at home to try and close it out. But we'll see. Second game on the card, Lakers visiting the Grizzlies. Is there a twist here? Could the Grizzlies get a home win and make this thing a little more interesting, because this was one of the highly hyped and highly anticipated first round series, and I think we all thought it would go past five. And Memphis obviously has been dealing with, at the beginning of the series, John Morant not being 100% and getting injured and all the Dylan Brooks stuff. But the Grizzlies have to win it. They just got to win a game, you know, and that's the thing. Like, if they can get in the win column and send the series back to LA, they should have won the game on Monday night in game four and did not. So how will that impact what will happen tonight in Memphis? And can the Grizzlies find a way to make a series out of this? Because really, I mean, the Lakers' three wins, you know, game four was close and competitive, but one and three really down the stretch in both were not. So the Lakers have been the better team. They deserve to be up 3-1. And the Grizzlies are going to need a plot twist of some kind get back in this series. Ditto for the Cleveland Cavaliers and New York Knicks. We've talked a lot about that series. That's the first game tonight in Cleveland as the Cavs. The Donovan Mitchell game, I would think it's coming tonight as he has struggled in this series. And credit to Tom Thibodeau and the Knicks for blanketing Cleveland with all sorts of different defensive techniques that have obviously worked. Just a pair of games on the ice as the Boston Bruins will look to wrap up the Florida Panthers as that game is tonight in Boston. I thought that Tampa and Toronto were tonight, but it's tomorrow, that game five. So it's game five between Boston and Florida, Boston leading 3-1 as Boston looks to become the first team to punch its ticket to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And Colorado and Seattle also square off tonight. No Cale Makar for the Colorado Avalanche, and Seattle has been a pretty good road team. Look out for those Kraken, as they got a big overtime win at home on Monday night in game four. Jordan Eberle, game winner, and they've been confident on the road. They won game one on the road. They were in game two in Denver. So if I had to pick an upset tonight in the NHL, I'm much more in line with Seattle than I am Florida. It feels like the Panthers had the life sucked out of them in those two games in Boston. And, those two games at their building in Sunrise in Florida. And, you know, what was obviously, rightfully so, a lot of energy for the Panthers going back home tied 1-1. The air is very much out of the balloon for Florida, now down 3-1. Heading to TD Garden for Game 5 tonight. So it's a two-game night in the NHL, a four-game night in the NBA, and, you know, obviously plenty of baseball always if you are a baseball enthusiast, and I am. A lot of matinee action. The Yankees double up the Twins and win 12-6. Cleveland is a 4-1 winner over Colorado. The Blue Jays blank the White Sox 8-0. The Orioles triple up the Red Sox 6-2. And Cincinnati with a walk-off win over Texas, 5-2. Bad series for the Rangers in Southwest Ohio after the Rangers had started well this season. They just got swept by Cincinnati. So, maybe the Rangers drifting back a little bit. But that's the baseball action going on right now, and plenty of games tonight on the diamond as well. That'll just about wrap things up for us here on a Wednesday afternoon. More draft talk tomorrow as Howard Balzer will join. We wanted to get the perspective of these teams at the top of the draft. John Bellmer just told us that John McClain, the longtime Houston Texans writer, believes it will be Will Levis on Thursday night for the Texans at 2. And at 3, what will happen? With all this talk of a trade for Arizona to move down, and the appetite for quarterbacks always so large this time of year. That will wrap things up for us, though. As I said, I'm back tomorrow from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 to 3 Central. Thanks to John Bellmer for producing. Thanks to our three guests. My name is Greg Frank, signing off. Sports Kings is up on the other side. It's First Name Sports bidding you a friendly farewell on the Sports Map Radio Network.